All right, it's time to go inside her story with Jackie Reed. It's been so good working with you, Jackie, for the last two weeks, man. You know, Jackie and I, of course, go way back to BET.
BET days.
And, you know, it's like the first time we really worked together, though.
I know, because you left BET before I got a chance to get over there, but we're still, you know, connected for life.
No doubt.
From that experience. Yeah, yeah, so true.
Well,
so good
you.
Morning to you, and it's been wonderful working with you, Donnie. Good morning, Sybil, and good morning, Damon.
I was on BET, too.
I knew people at BET.
Well, we love you too. So. Yeah. All right, so good morning, everybody, and happy Friday. So last weekend, Hollywood made history, making the Me Too and Time's Up movements prominent forces at the Golden Globe Awards ceremony. Since last October, the Me Too movement against sexual harassment and assault primarily against women has empowered many survivors to tell their stories, often after years of keeping silent. But what about survivors who have yet to come forward and may be harboring feelings of regret or shame for staying silent, especially in the wake of Me Too? I'm going inside her story with Dr. R.G. Allen Wilson. She is the director of clinical training at Drexel University and founder and CEO of Faith, Inc. and Connections Matter, LLC. Good morning, Dr. R.G.
Good morning, Jackie. Good morning, everyone else.
Good morning.
I'm so glad we're talking about this. So many women have come forward, but there are so many more who have stayed silent or taken settlements and maybe feeling, you know, some self-imposed pressure in light of this whole Me Too moment to come forward, and also feeling guilt, regret for not coming forward. And I know this because of personal experience. Dr. RG and I spoke about this briefly, you know, assault after refusing a man's advances, sexual harassment I dealt with in which I took a settlement to keep quiet, and most recently sexual harassment while a patient in the hospital. You know, for women dealing with these feelings, Dr. RG, should we say something now?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, that's a really good question, Jackie, and thank you for sharing your story. I mean, it's courageous to even speak the words. So many of my clients and people that I've worked with in the sexual abuse space say that it's just healing to speak the words, even if you don't speak them publicly, to give voice to them. But I also say that, you know, there are women out there and some men that should not be ashamed that they haven't spoken. It really is a personal decision. And now that we are sort of creating a culture of speaking up and speaking out, it would be a wonderful time, but the process is different for absolutely everyone. So it really is a personal decision. I think that you have to seek therapy, maybe a spiritual advisor, really go deep within and determine for yourself, what is it that you want to gain from speaking up? What is your ultimate goal? Because it is different for everyone.
Well, you know what, Dr. RG, what I struggle with most is why I didn't say anything in the first place. You know, I beat myself up about, you know, not naming names and holding the men accountable, you know, and I'm still not ready to name names. And for women like me, why didn't we say anything in the first place?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, that's an age-old question. It's because oftentimes what happens is then when women do speak up, then they're ostracized for speaking up. And then there are women that are ostracized for not speaking up. There's fear, Jackie. There's shame. There's blame, guilt, embarrassment, oftentimes intimidation, and even cultural norms. When we think about the norms, a lot of times we feel like in the workplaces and spaces that, you know, it may be our fault, or this is just what happens, or we need to keep our mouths shut so that we can continue to climb the ladder. There's lots of different reasons and variables that contribute to why we don't speak up in the first place. But what I would say is that oftentimes what that does is that leaves the woman or the person who's been victimized with years of pain, years of turmoil that they keep within. Anytime you keep something inside that has been problematic or painful for so long, then it's bound to have a psychological impact.
Doctor, I have a question.
Go ahead, Damon.
What do you say to those women who may be suffering low self-esteem because no one has ever harassed them?
I cannot with you right now. We're going to ignore that question and go on to how do we resolve all these feelings now, Dr. RG? You know, how do you resolve that? Not with Damon.
I mean, and that's not really a bad question, but, you know, the first part of the question, because many women and men have low self-esteem. Sometimes it's related to abuse and sometimes it's not. But at the end of the day, they think about the term self-esteem. We all need to feel good about ourselves, and it takes time. We have to build ourselves up the same way if you were to be working out or building up your professional career. It takes time. You need to talk about it and then make a decision for yourself. No one really, Jackie and the Tom Joyner team, can tell a survivor how to feel, what they should be feeling, or when they should be feeling it. Because in a very real sense, it's sometimes like a death. Oftentimes we see ourselves as someone who's never going, this is not going to be me. And in the wake of the Me Too movement, what has happened is it's given people a groundswell tipping point or courage to actually speak up and even begin to think about the fact that maybe those situations that I blew off that were really not a big deal, or I thought they weren't a big deal, yeah, they are a big deal. That was Me Too.
I'm sorry, go ahead. What can we do to foster an environment for people to feel comfortable with whatever side or whatever move they choose to make, to tell or not to tell? Because it seems like the whole environment is so guilt-ridden right now that people just don't know whether to do it or get off the pot. And for people who are not ready, how can we make them feel okay about whatever decision they make?
Oh, great question, Sybil. Great question. I mean, at the end of the day, we have to create cultures of compassion, cultures of being gracious with people, compassion of understanding. At the end of the day, you know, really it is a personal decision. And so one of the ways we can do that is put ourselves in someone else's shoes. We never know how difficult it is if we're not really walking in their shoes. And so all of us, if we're partnering in this movement of both Me Too and Time's Up, the pathway to healing is to really begin to think about time to thrive. How is it that we can all thrive in an environment that's empathic and understanding with the reality that most of us have experienced some kind of trauma? We really don't get out of this world without experiencing some kind of trauma, doing something that is worthy of being forgiven, or something that we've experienced that we need to forgive. So it's time out for not understanding that people experience these kinds of things, and that we need to really connect with one another and partner with other with one another based on healing and wholeness.
Okay. Dr. RG, and on social media, it's at Dr. RG.
Yes, you can ask Dr. RG on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And you can reach out to me on my new website at Dr. RG Connect. And we've got a new app called Ask Dr. RG. Those are all ways people can get in touch with me.
Thank you, Dr. RG. Such great advice.
Oh, my pleasure.
As always. Damon.
My job. People.
It's a chair, Jackie.
I'm giving you a side eye.
I know this.
Damon,
thank you, Jackie.
Thanks, guys.
All right, it's 25 after the hour.